Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Yes, I am Seth Merrow, and this is Racing Across America for this Saturday, June 4th. Marching steadily towards Belmont Stakes Day. Should be a lot of fun. A week from today, Belmont Stakes, as we said on the earlier show, I think the Belmont Stakes is shaping up to be interesting with the return of the Kentucky Derby winner. We'll talk a little bit about that and more. But, boy, the undercard is going to be really great. But some great racing today as well. We'll talk a little bit about, we'll look a little forward and a little back, Triple Crown with Mike Curry. He'll join us in a few minutes. He writes for America's Best Racing, and he's done a little preview of the Belmont. Look at Rich Strike as a Belmont hopeful, and we'll talk Rich Strike and his Derby performance. He also did a little recap after the Preakness, talking about early voting and maybe, you know, what his future holds. So we'll talk that as well with Mike Curry. He'll join us in just a couple. And then a little bit later on, Joe Christofek from Churchill Downs will join us. Churchill with a really great card today, of nice card of stakes races. So we'll hit on some of the Churchill Stakes with Joe coming up a little bit later on. Just quickly before we get to Mike, we'll go to a break first. But before we get to Mike, I wanted to go, and we mentioned it on the handicapping show yesterday. There was some consternation on Twitter after the early pick five at Monmouth, which people were excited about. People love the pick five now, and you get a pick five at any track with a carryover, and people jump in, and they did yesterday at Monmouth. And then race one at Monmouth yesterday, $85 and change. The winner gets it done. It was Moon Secret, who was coming off two wins, two last-place finishes, had finished 8th by 71 lengths, 7th by 31 lengths, and he wins yesterday by at $85 and change. He was the 7th longest price in a field of 7. That early pick 5 that had the carryover at Monmouth yesterday, $85, a $4.60 favorite, an $8.80 second choice, then a $34 sixth choice out of a field of 8, and another favorite at $6 wraps it up. So a couple of favorites, a second choice, and then two kind of kooky long shots. And what did you wind up with if you had that sequence? $68,000 is the payoff for a 50-cent pick five early yesterday. And as I said, I was handicapping Monmouth during the afternoon show yesterday, and I was with the betting public there. I was floundering. Although, again, there was some horses in there that were not necessarily that opening $85 horse, but there was horses in there that you looked at and it's like, I didn't like them, but you went to the PPs and okay, I could have, you know, you it's not like crazy, but it was a tough day yesterday at Monmouth, highlighted by that early pick five, certainly. But as I say, if you got it right now, looking at the pool here, I'm guessing there must have been 3 winning tickets, $68,000 with the carryover in the early pick five yesterday at Monmouth. Let me remind you that first, the Belmont Syndicate, that opened yesterday. I checked the website early this morning, and the syndicate's full. They go fast. Congratulations if you got on the Belmont Syndicate team for next weekend, and good luck. We'll be rooting for you, certainly. But you can take advantage of the Exacta board today here at the Clubhouse Race. Hit your numbers on the Exacta. You wind up with a voucher for the restaurant, so maybe you wind up with free lunch. We'd love to have you come down and have some fun. Exacta board contest here at the Clubhouse Racebook this afternoon, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. All right, as noted, a little bit later on, Joe Christofek from Churchill Downs, but we'll take a break. We'll come back with Mike Curry from America's Best Racing. We'll talk some Triple Crown results and looking forward a little bit as well, so stay tuned. All of that right after this.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
David Stone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB, become a better horse player.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Happy to be joined now by Mike Curry. As I said earlier, you can find his work over on the America's Best Racing website, and he's covered in recent weeks some of the Triple Crown action. And as we are still in the midst of the Triple Crown season, I thought we'd reach out and do a little preview and review with Mike. Mike, good morning. I'm bored to talk. Again, we'll go back and talk a little Derby and talk some Preakness and maybe look ahead to the Belmont as well. And you know, as I pulled up your recent work on the America's Best Racing website, Triple Crown Hopeful Snapshots, Derby winner Rich Strike and his chances in the Belmont Stakes, I thought I want to get Mike on because I'm going to be interested to hear your take. And first we'll take a look at the stretch run to the Kentucky Derby with the crazy result at 80-1. At mid-stretch, I have Epicenter. I have Zandon. I'm thinking I'm going up to the window to collect, but no, on the inside comes Rich Strike. This was completely fluky, and I just don't think this horse is going to win another big race. I think this was just a crazy result. But the workout the other day, I was in here doing the handicapping show, and he worked in the midst of the races, and he looked pretty good. Now I'm just wondering, is he one of these horses that's just in that bubble of 5 weeks where he just gets really good? I'm baffled now. You know, obviously I won't make decisions till I see the PPs, but I'm kind of baffled at what to do with them now. I'm really interested to hear your take. First on the Derby, and then what do you make of them going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned before just an incredible sequence of events just to get in, and I've talked about this with a friend of mine in the office, that even though maybe from an odds perspective, it's not the biggest upset in Derby history, it might be. I mean, really, just the fact that, you know, he needed 3 to 4 horses to bypass the race, including the eventual Preakness Stakes winner, a late scratch, outside post, a jockey with no graded stakes wins, who rode at Belterra on Friday. And, you know, it just, it makes sense why he was so overlooked, and he probably the way the odds in the Derby have been in recent years, you usually don't see a horse at 80-1, but I think it makes sense. You know, that's a race where a lot of people handicap it in advance and have kind of like some strategies mapped out, and then he gets in, and I think he just was completely overlooked. But as you mentioned, I mean, after the race, I came away kind of thinking, yeah, this was a fluke, it won't happen again. But I also have been a little bit more encouraged now than when I wrote the story. You know, you mentioned the workout. He looks like he's training really, really well. He obviously has a terrific pedigree for the distance. And, you know, we've heard so much about, oh, closers, you know, it's not a closer's race. But horses that race from off the pace can and do win the Belmont Stakes. I mean, in the last, you know, 5 editions, not counting Tis the Law, I think, you've got, you know, Essential Quality, Sir Winston, and Creator all came from off the pace. So it's certainly not a deep closer's race, but it doesn't mean that it can't happen.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot that sideline that we talked about certainly the day after the race, but Sonny Leone, yeah, wins his first graded stakes race in the Kentucky Derby. The whole story was just, and another side story that I still think is great is the official Kentucky Derby t-shirt. didn't include him. They only had the first 20. So the T-shirt doesn't have the Kentucky Derby winner. We're also going to pull up, because it's a race I haven't showed as we've talked about this over the past few weeks, going to go back and look at his lone other victory. I mean, he has two victories now, the Maiden Breaker and the Kentucky Derby. And we're going to go back and look up September 17th of 2021. This is back at Churchill Downs. It's in a maiden claimer. He, of course, was claimed out of this race. And Rich Strike gets it done by 17 and a quarter lengths in an 11-horse field. So I'm also wondering, as I say, I thought the Derby was fluky, but now I'm wondering after the workout the other afternoon, but is it possible this horse is also maybe just our Churchill horse for a course?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility, and I also think that a lot of times on synthetic tracks, they have a tendency to kind of, I don't know if the right word is mask, but a lot of times it's a fairly even race coming into the stretch and just like a cavalry charge to the finish line. And sometimes I don't think it's maybe as representative of what you're going to see. So I do think there's a chance that just the turfway races maybe cast a little bit of a blind spot over this horse. Yeah, you know, but you make a good point. It's possible that Churchill might just be a track that he really thrives on. And it's also, you know, obviously the jockey factor was interesting in the Derby, but he also doesn't have experience at Belmont, and that can be a tricky track to race at, too. I mean, it's obviously a different layout, a mile and a half circumference, and I think you have to hope the jockey waits and waits and then waits a little bit longer before he makes his bid, and with a deep closer, I'm still worried about it. I'm more encouraged now about Rich Strike's chances, but I still am a little bit skeptical.
And you make a great point about the jockey, albeit a guy who seemed nonplussed about, you know, going in and winning the Kentucky Derby, which is something. But Belmont is a really different animal as far as racetracks, and I think jockeys who are brand new to it, which I think for folks who may be jumping on Rich Strike's bandwagon, it'll be interesting to see if Sonny Leone can manage to get a mount or two before the Belmont Stakes to get a feel for the track.
Yeah, I remember in Smarty Jones's Belmont Stakes bid, I think Stuart Elliott didn't have any mounts. And I did a feature on Fleet Alex a few years ago, and I talked to Tim Ritchie. And he said he gave very, very specific instructions to Jeremy Rose. He said, you know, halfway around the turn, if you think you should make your move, count to 10 and then make your move. You know, it just is, it's one of those things where I think the stretch run at Belmont can be, like you said, tricky, maybe a little bit misleading. He said, Tim Ritchie said, when they switch leads, just remember you're not at the 3/8 pole, you're at a long ways from home. So.
Your article also talked about the pedigree and the connections and whatnot, and we talked a little bit about Sonny Leone, the jockey, but Eric Reed, it was only his second graded stakes win. And they did it in the Derby, so you can't really make a definitive statement, but boy, is he going to get the, you know, graded stakes win number 3 in the Belmont Stakes? I mean, my point being, I think experience counts, and can they make Lightning Strike twice? I mean, they did it in the Derby. Can they do it again in the Belmont?
And I mean, the other thing, too, is, and I mean, it's not a small factor, is that Rich Strike looks very pace-dependent. And there just isn't a lot of speed lined up for this race. And, you know, we talk about the circumstances, and you can't overlook the fact that the pace was just hard in the Kentucky Derby. I mean, I don't think they're going to be I don't think Sonny Leone's going to have him 20 lengths back if they go the opening half mile in 51 seconds. But still, it you know, for a horse that's extraordinarily pace dependent, you'd like to see a few more speed horses in this race to at least give him a realistic shot. And it just doesn't look like that's the way the race is going to shape up at this point.
Yeah, we had the handicapping show earlier, and I was talking to my co-host Anthony Mormino. We were talking about it. The Belmont is shaping up as an interesting race, no doubt about it. The undercard, though, with the Met Mile and Flight Line potentially and whatnot, is shaping up probably as the race of the day. But I do think it's an interesting addition of the Belmont Stakes. And it's interesting with Rich Strike skipping the Preakness, the Derby winner. Will he validate what we saw at the Derby? And if Todd Pletcher enters Nest, that's going to be intriguing. And as I said, and I'm not going to put you on the spot either, but give me an idea. I'm back and forth with Rich Strike, but I still think I'm tilting more towards that was fluky, and I'm not convinced really in the Belmont. What are your feelings of Rich Strike now going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see him run well, and I think he does have a chance. You mentioned how well he's working. I think a lot of people have seen that most recent workout. And I think he does have a good chance to run well. Even something like that, I think, would be encouraging. I'd like to see him at least in with a shot. But I do agree with you. I think Nest is a really interesting filly for this race. I mean, obviously just absolutely bred to love the distance. I think she's got a lot of just natural ability. And she'll also be a little bit closer to the pace. She's kind of more in line with what you normally look for one of the off-the-pace runners in the Belmont Stakes, where they can track a little bit closer, don't leave quite as much to do in the stretch. And like I said, I think she's going to absolutely love a mile and a half. So, I think, Pletcher's Modonegal is also a really nice option in this race, but I think at this point I'm sort of leaning a little bit towards Nest as my pick.
Yeah, interesting. And we'll know on Tuesday. They'll draw on Tuesday, and I'll get your opinion, because I say we talked about it on the earlier show, and we were saying, what's NBC going to do, because they play to a little bit of a different audience that maybe don't follow horse racing as closely. But it really does seem to be, as horse players, I think we're all really getting excited for the Met Mile as opposed to the Belmont. I think we're all looking forward to it be a fun and kind of interesting Belmont, but that Met Mile is really shaping up to be one of the races of the year.
Yep.
Flight Line and the undercard overall with the Ogden Phipps as well. So looking forward to that. Speaking of Triple Crown and big races, as I say, you covered also the Preakness and talked a little bit about early voting and coming out of that. We're going to watch now the stretch run to the Preakness and see early voting get it done over Epicenter. First off, I'll get your opinion, because there was buzz after the race on social media kind of taking Joel Rosario to task. And I said on my show the next day, I said, I don't know whether that was warranted. I think Epicenter got out. And 9 times out of 10, he's going to find a perfect spot and be okay. But as happened in the Preakness, a horse on the outside comes in and a horse on the inside comes out, and Epicenter gets squeezed a little bit. And then at that point, Joel Rosario is in a little bit of a jackpot and has to settle into a spot where he's out of position. I thought his second place finish was very good given that. But again, I'll get your opinion. There was criticism, and feel free to disagree with me if you do. I didn't really think it was warranted, though, against Joel Rosario.
No, I mean, obviously it's easy to second guess after the fact, but I didn't think that was necessarily the difference in the race. And honestly, of all the riders, Rosario to me is probably I think. The best. And I'm sure if you go back and ask him, there might be something you might do a little bit differently, but I didn't think it warranted the criticism that he got levied at him after that. I honestly just thought that early voting was a fresher horse, obviously perfectly handled by Chad Brown, and he ran in a lights out race. I think the speed figures kind of pointed to him. He was a fairly obvious choice besides Epicenter. If it wasn't going to be Epicenter, I think a lot of people could look at that race and say, well, the speed figures would certainly indicate that there's the second most obvious choice. And pretty much kind of, I think Ragazin had him pretty close to the same type of race that he ran in the Wood, right? I think the winning speed figure for him in the Preakness was a 7.25. So, I think he earned it, is the way I look at it.
Yeah, and again, you had a nice article on ABR looking at you know, his result in the Preakness and talking about, you know, what's the future hold for early voting. And again, you talk about the connections and whatnot. And it was interesting to hear Chad Brown talk Derby week, leading into the Derby, about whether early voting would run or not, and saying, you know, it's nice to have an owner being Seth Klarman, who doesn't feel compelled. And as a guy on the outside looking in, I don't blame these owners who have a horse who has the shot to go to the Derby, has the points, but maybe like early voting is a little unseasoned, but this may be their only shot. And Chad Brown was making the point that, you know, I have an owner who doesn't necessarily feel that compelled to go because we may get another shot. He's that kind of owner, and so we can take our time with him. And I definitely think the conservative approach paid off for them in the Preakness.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't you think that moving forward, it probably is going to be extraordinarily beneficial too? I mean, you know, just the fact that he didn't have to go through the grind of a 20-horse field, coming back on, you know, shorter rest. I think he just, the potential is there for a terrific second half of the season. I know they mentioned the Jim Dandy and the Haskell after, and I think the Haskell would be an absolutely ideal spot for him, but I do think there's also generally the allure of going to Saratoga and getting a race on that track before the Travers. But, I mean, he also mentioned, too, that, you know, the mile and a quarter was a bit of a question. And so I think, as you said, they made the right choice here. It was a race where there wasn't going to be as much early speed. Or at least, you know, looking at it ahead of time, you assume there probably wouldn't be as much jockeying for good position early, a little bit shorter of a race, and probably less stress overall on the horse. And I think Chad Brown's got to, and Seth have to be looking at this and thinking, you know, at this point, we're in a terrific spot for the rest of the season. And, you know, by the time they get to a mile and a quarter in the Travers, they'll have a little bit more foundation, experience, and they can do it on their own terms, you know. So I honestly really think early voting has extraordinarily high potential for the rest of the season, and I'm excited to see what happens next. I'd love to see him in the Haskell. I'm not sure what they ultimately will end up deciding, but I think that'd be a great spot for him.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see where they go, because I you know, Chad being a local guy, I know the Travers is, and Seth Klarman too, I know the Travers would be a huge accomplishment that they'd aim for, but how do they get there? Jim Dandy or Travers, Jim Dandy or Haskell, interesting to see. And also have to mention, again, going down your article and looking at the pedigree notes as well, also have to mention, Gunrunner has just been incredible at stud. I mean, this guy, right from the get-go, Gunrunner was notable, and so Gunrunner gets another winner, and a nice classic winner as well with early voting. But again, Gunrunner has just been absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, and for early voting's potential as a stallion, he's out of a half sister to Spicetown, who's a heck of a sire too. So he's got every chance to not only have a terrific career on the track, but afterwards as well.
Yeah, it's Chad Brown, proverbial embarrassment of riches, Zandon, Jack Christopher, early voting. It's going to be fun to see where he spots these three-year-olds as the year goes along, because I think the whole three-year-old picture is still much, much up in the air. We'll see how it plays out as we get into summer, which will start to put a stamp on who we might be leaning towards Eclipse. Mike, before we let you go, I have to talk of one other Preakness thing, because every time we talk to somebody about the Preakness, we've always mentioned, what about the betting in the Preakness, and what do you make of that? Fenwick goes off at 13-1, Happy Jack at 11-1. Fenwick, if you looked at social media all day long, people were posting, a lot of the day he was sitting at 7 or 8-1, and people were saying, well, this can't be right. Obviously, these are the wrong odds they're posting. But no, he goes off at 13-1. And the only thing, and I think the best explanation was, it was the rich strike factor, and people were like, play the longest shot on the board.
Yeah, I mean, there really was no explanation for it. You know, you were looking at the odds and thinking that maybe something was wrong. I know a few people had tweeted that they thought that there was a mistake. Maybe the odds weren't reflective. You know, looking at some double payouts and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it was just honestly, truly shocking. And, you know, there were a few horses, some even in the Derby, and which makes me think that, you know, the fact that Rich Strike drew in from the also eligible list and was, you know, so much of a longer shot than, say, Happy Jack and the Derby, that maybe he just kind of slipped through the cracks. And I do think some of the long shots that we've seen win, you know, in since the turn of the century between Giacomo and Mind That Bird and now Rich Strike, on these big race days, maybe we'll see some inflated prices on horses that actually have a chance. I mean, I was thrilled in the Preakness just with the odds that we, because to me it was a fairly clearly two horse race, and I didn't have a sniff of Rich Strike. So I'm not going to pretend that I did, but yeah, I did think the Preakness looked like a pretty formulaic race, and I thought that early voting and Epicenter were pretty clear standouts.
And the price on, because of the action the others were taking, the price on early voting was kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you had to be thrilled if you liked any of the logical choices. It seemed to me that you know, in general, I went into that race thinking that I was going to have to get pretty creative. But, you know, a win bet was actually a fairly good bet on early voting.
And the exact, I was in here doing a bankroll promotion. I'm given a certain amount of money, and we pick a team at random, and I play on their behalf. And I was kind of struggling all day with some near misses, and I slammed the exacta there and bailed everybody out, and we had a fun day because the exacta was good with the two logical. So it wound up working out for us. Mike, again, appreciate the thoughts. I will remind people they can find your work on the America's Best Racing website, and we will check in again.
All right. Thanks so much for having me. It was fun.
Appreciate it. Mike Curry, again, America's Best Racing, has a lot of great work on there regularly, so check that out. We'll take another break. We'll come back, and maybe I'll do some news and some quick news and notes before we join Joe Christofek in just a few minutes, so stay tuned. Having trouble finding us? It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Birdstone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. I mentioned it earlier. Penn National last night had a big night with it. It was their big night with the Penn Mile. We had nighttime thoroughbreds last night, so I hope you jumped in. And more importantly, I hope you had the winner. Again, we had the crazy horse that kicked off the carryover pick five at Monmouth yesterday, who paid 80. Well, you got 80 to 1, 83 to 1 on the winner yesterday, the Penn Mile. Wow, what a summer. Gets it done at $168. 1-2 favorite, Annapolis with Irod Ortiz for Todd Pletcher, winds up second in there, Uncaptured Spirit third. But second longest price on the board, 83 to 1, gets it done pretty easily by a length and a quarter. So the Penn Mile upset last night. the Penn Oaks, it was Haughty with Flavian Pratt for Chad Brown. Haughty at 2-5. So the favorite does get it done in the Penn Oaks. So, again, a nice evening of racing yesterday at Penn National. Their highlight at Penn Mile card with a little minor $160 upset. There. Don't forget, we talked about it on the Handicappers Report, but coming up, what about an hour? 11:30 our time, it will be the Epsom Derby, or what is called now the Kazoo Derby, or Derby, as they say over there. Group 1 race for the three-year-olds. Field of 17 scheduled. The favorite on the morning line, Desert Crown at 8-5, goes out for Sir Michael Studi. 2-for-2 so far, had a two-year-old start last November. And then just a couple, 3 weeks ago, May 12th, came back 1.25 miles in start number two and gets it done to go to 2-for-2 for the record. Today, the Derby, 1.5 miles. Quite incredible if the horse goes 3-for-3, starting the career at 1 mile. Then taking time off, coming back at 1.25 miles, and career start number 3, 1.5 miles. But that is the morning line favorite. There were a couple of horses that I thought were a little bit interesting. At 60-1 on the morning line, number 5, Grand Alliance, I think is kind of interesting and playable. Piz Bedil, if I have that close to correct, the number 10 horse, 10-1 on the morning line. A couple of wins and a second in 3 career starts. For one of the O'Brien family, one of the sons, Frankie Dettori on board. And as I say, a 10-1 Piz Bedil looks a little bit intriguing as well. So fun addition this afternoon, this morning, our time, of the Epsom Derby. Race 5 from Epsom. And again, it'll go off our time at about 11:30. So keep your eyes open for that. All right, we'll take a break. As promised earlier, nice stakes card today at Churchill Down. We'll preview some of those stakes in just a moment when we will be joined by their paddock commentator, Joe Christofek. So stay tuned. I'm Seth Merrill, and as serious horse players, we know that information is critical when placing a bet. With live streaming of more than 30 tracks, race replays, free past performances, and daily picks from professional handicappers, no one gives you more up-to-the-minute information than Capital OTB. Combine that with the best player awards in New York State, and you have everything a serious horse player needs to be successful.
Win more with Capital OTB.
Winning starts here.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
The Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTB.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Joe Christofek from Churchill Downs on a really nice Saturday of stakes action down in Louisville. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, Seth?
Very good. Happy to have you on board. And I don't think we've talked to you since Fairgrounds. I don't know if we've caught up to you yet, Churchill. So just give us a little update on how the meet's gone so far. And we talked a little bit about it in the previous segment, but give us some reflections on the Kentucky Derby as well.
Yeah, I mean, the immediate reaction to the Kentucky Derby was probably like everybody else. Like, first of all, who was that? Then secondly, was that really Rich Strike? And then third of all, could that happen? And then after having several adult beverages that night and kind of just still being stunned, woke up the next morning, kind of looked back at some things, and obviously it was a fall-apart race and a great ride by a jockey that had nothing to lose. I guess we'll find out whether or not this horse is really legitimate in the Belmont. He won the Kentucky Derby fair and square, quite honestly. I mean, every horse had a chance to close the way he did, and they didn't. So we'll see how it plays out moving forward. But absolutely in shock, but maybe not quite as much in the days following the actual race.
And it was really a great weekend of racing all around. You guys did a great job. And again, just how's the meet gone so far? And I'll touch on, I'm in here doing the handicapping show in the afternoons and watching a lot of Churchill. But because of the 3 o'clock start, Belmont on Thursdays, we do kind of a twilight edition, cover some of the early races on your Thursday twilight card. And I'll see the camera swing up into the crowd. And it looks like those Thursdays, you're getting a great kind of a young crowd. And it looks like so far Churchill's having a pretty nice meet.
Yeah, the meet's been really good. We've been blessed with good weather for the most part, even on the days where it looks like it's going to rain. We've avoided it. The quality's been solid. You're starting to see some of the two-year-old races trickle in more and more as we move forward. You know, that Derby City 6 carryover is like 82,000 today. And even when the jackpot isn't hit, and I've said this before, I'll say it again and continue to say it, I think it's the only jackpot wager worth playing in horse racing, because even if you are one of many winners on any given night, we've seen $3,000, $6,000, $8,000, $13,000 payoffs. And you look back at it and you say to yourself, man, you know, with the right ticket construction, I might have been able to hit that. The quality for today's card, obviously good. Looking forward to Stephen Foster Day, you know, the beginning of July. And then, you know, at least as far as I'm concerned, South, I'll self-proclaim me deserving a break. After Fairgrounds coming right here for the Derby and then going through this meet, we're going to add a fifth day coming up as well. I'll be ready for a little summer vacation.
I don't blame you at all. And I've said it to you again, and it sounds like I'm blowing smoke up your skirt here, but I really enjoy you guys on the pregame down there at Churchill. I think you do a great job. I love the play of the day and the long shot of the day and the favorite you're against. That was a nice innovation. You have a really nice team down there as well. You and Scott Shapiro and Caitlin and what it's just pass my compliments on to them as well, because really do enjoy the work you guys do. So I know it's a lot of work, but know that people are out here enjoying it. And speaking of a lot of work, yesterday you guys had some comments afterwards, and before I got to today, I had to go back to yesterday, because again, I was doing the handicapping show. We're going to watch the stretch run to yesterday's seventh race. I'd love your comments, because it was one of those wow performances. Gunite was making the return. The hopeful winner from last year was making the three-year-old return. Gunite's going to be the number two, but Conniger at 8-5. Boy, this was impressive. And I bring it up also because I wouldn't be shocked to see this guy up here in our jerkins a little bit later this summer. But what did you think yesterday, the performance by Conniger?
Yeah, I was very skeptical, as you heard the pregame, of that horse's win at Keeneland was like 75-1. It was on a golden rail. You know, he was facing much tougher competition yesterday, but some people kind of got in my ear during the course of the morning saying, this horse has been training like the next great thing on the backstretch since the Keeneland race, and man, did he run to it. I mean, that was beyond impressive. I think he got a 106 brisk speed figure, and he did it with presumably something left in the tank. just missed the 10-year-old track record that the legendary Groupie Doll set. Yeah, I don't know where it came from. I don't know the massive improvement for a horse that cost $9,500 or $9,000 as a yearling by Jimmy Creed. Just goes to show you a good horse can come from anywhere. And I couldn't be happier for Michael Tomlinson, a great guy. Good to see him have a really, really nice horse, and excited for this horse's future, and we'll be rooting for him moving forward.
Yeah, has strung two nice and vastly improved efforts together. Won the last one over at Keeneland at 73-1, and yesterday is the favorite. And as I say, as a nice, sprinting three-year-old, wouldn't be surprised to see him up here a little bit later in the year. All right, let's get to the Churchill card for this afternoon. Stakes action kicking off in race number 5 with a Regret. Speaking of three-year-olds, these are three-year-old fillies on the grass. Chad Brown has a nice runner in here for Klarovich. Moving back to turf after a try in the Kentucky Oaks Candy Raid. But I'm going to pull up the April 28th Keeneland race from Beside Herself. She's going to be the number 5 horse here. Goes out for Todd Pletcher off this front end win. I think that one's kind of interesting. Your thoughts in the Regret?
I think the first thought that comes to mind is the fact that the rails are down. We're at home base for the first time in a couple weeks, and there was some talk here at Churchill that the inside part of the turf probably saw Derby week, a lot of horses winning wide and then the middle of the turf course. Now, that's when the turf course was brand new. It's had quite a bit of use since then. Now the rails come down, and you would think theoretically speed in the inside would be good because we've been in lane 3 and 4, you know, the last couple of weeks. So there's a lot of fresh grass down on the inside. That would normally mean speed. That would normally mean inside, but the inside wasn't good before. So what's going to change? This is the first grass race of the day. I think you really want to pay attention to how it's run. Beside Herself could very well go gate to wire. Makula could very well do the catching from off the pace. I thought she ran great in the Edgewood on Kentucky Oaks Day. And then Walkathon has kind of become a new horse since moving over to the grass for Ian Wilkes. She still gets a little bit worked up. She gets a little washy. She's going to have to really step up, I think, to take on this kind of caliber of competition successfully, but one to watch, certainly. Julian Le Perroux sitting on 999 career wins at Churchill Downs, so that's a storyline worth watching as well. Only 4 of the riders have gotten to that milestone. Pat Day, Calvin Burrell, Robbie Alvarado, and Corey Lannery, so that certainly would be elite company.
Yeah, that'll be fun to kind of a little side story to pay attention to on the afternoon. A little bit later in the card, race number 7 on Saturday, the Shawnee, couple $100,000 up for grabs for the fillies and mares going a mile and a 16th. I'm looking forward to this one. Ken McPeak has Crazy Beautiful, who has run well at Churchill in the past, winner of the Delaware Oaks last summer. But Pauline's Pearl, that's why I'm looking forward to the race. I liked her going a couple races back at Oaklawn, where she just got beat by CeCe. And off of that, I liked her in the La Troyenne. We're going to watch the La Troyenne at Churchill on May 6th. Pauline's Pearl is going to be the number 6 horse here. I'm just going to be interested to see if she can validate what we've seen over the past few races and really, as a 4-year-old, stamp herself as a really solid player in this filly and mare division this year. Your thoughts on the Shawnee?
Yeah, I agree with you on Pauline's Pearl. I picked her in the La Troyenne, too. I don't know if She Dares the Devil is the same horse that she used to be. But Pauline's Pearl broke a little bit slowly. She was 5 wide in the first turn, didn't have the greatest of trips, had to work to wear down She Dares the Devil, but she beat her on the square. She's the horse to beat again today, but Army Wife is very intriguing. She's beaten Pauline's Pearl in the past and did it pretty convincingly in the Iowa Oaks last year. She was 3rd in the Alabama. She was 3rd in the Cotillion. Not going to hold the Fall City against her in the slop. She's rested and ready for Mike Maker. The workouts leading up to this would tell that story. So at 9-2 in the morning line versus 3-5 for Pauline's Pearl, if Army Wife is as live as I think she might be, the discrepancy in odds is going to be a little bit closer than that. I give Army Wife a chance to beat Pauline's Pearl. She's getting a 5-pound break in the weight. She gets Tyler Gaffalione, who's been making all the right moves here at Churchill. But I really think it's a 2-horse race with a Crazy Beautiful being 3rd best.
Yeah, and Tyler Gaffalione, maybe another jockey that will join that 1,000-win club down there. He's just it's been a remarkable career watching him as he's moved around. All right, the Arlington Grade 3 event, a couple $100,000 up for grabs. Race number 8 this afternoon, mile and a 16th on the grass. And another fun race in here. Admission office goes out for Brian Lynch, but does it off a long layoff. This is a horse clearly talented, but boy, he's been on the sidelines for more than a year. Field Pass has some very solid back numbers for Mike Maker and has shown an affinity for Churchill in the past, albeit the previous turf course. And Gray's Fable is the one that I find a little bit interesting. Another Brian Lynch runner and Gray's Fable. We're going to take a look at the opening verse from May 5th. Gray's Fable is going to be the number 6 horse in here. And, you know, off of that, I'm tilting towards Gray's Fable, and I'll take the 7-2 morning line. What are your thoughts, though, on the Arlington?
Yeah, again, like I said earlier, watch the first turf race, see how the turf might be playing. I think that's an important storyline moving forward the rest of the day. If the inside and speed is truly good, then I think Good Smoking is probably good enough to run this field off their feet. If it's not, Admission Office obviously is super interesting. If he brings his B-plus game and the turf is playing fairly, I think he's the one to beat. When he's right, he's got a scintillating turn of foot. This horse was actually gelded in August. You don't see older horses, you know, 5-6-year-olds gelded very often. Yeah. I don't know what the story is behind that, but he was gelded in August. Brian Lynch has huge stats off the bench. This horse was entered here on May 26th and scratched. Guessing Brian was hoping to maybe get a little easier spot for the first race back. But the bottom line is this horse fits great in this race. It's not the strongest race for a grade 3. It's a short field, so he shouldn't encounter any traffic trouble. I'm going to give a very, very slight lean to Admission Office, hoping that he returns nearly as good as he left.
Johnny Velasquez scheduled to be in for the ride, so interesting runner there with the connections as well. All right, let's move on and take a look at race number 9, the Aristides, this afternoon. A couple $100,000 up for grabs. They're going to go 6 furlongs. This is a fun field. Bango goes out for Greg Foley, 6 wins and 12 starts down at Churchill and some in-the-money finishes. Miles Ahead, the triple-digit buyer win down at Gulfstream in February. Top Gunner coming in off a couple of wins, including a restricted stake. But I thought Bob's Edge was interesting, and I'm going to pull a replay up of the Whitmore going 2 starts back March 19th down at Oaklawn. Bob's Edge is going to be the number 2 horse. Subsequently ran 4th in the Count Fleet behind Jackie's Warrior in the follow-up to this. But I'm looking at this race 2 back and kind of hanging my hat on that for Bob's Edge. What do you think in the Aristides?
I wish I knew what I thought. I don't have any real strong conviction, honestly, in this race. You know, I was talking to Scott Shapiro earlier. I picked Miles Ahead. He doesn't have the horse anywhere in his selections. And I asked him why, and he said, well, the horse hasn't run any good races outside of the Gulfstream. And I look back, and I'm like, you know what? He's right. But those Gulfstream races are good enough to win this. So I hope he likes Churchill. You know, he's beaten Drain the Clock. He's beaten Diamond Oops. Those horses would be favorites in this race. Today, this horse is 9-2 off the clunker of an effort he threw in at Santa Anita last time out. So I gave that horse a slight edge as far as public selections go. This will definitely be a race where I'm spreading. Jalen Journey does intrigue me. You know, a former $40,000 claimer who's really taken his game to the next level. I think he's going to get the right trip. Nice to see Ricardo Santana Jr. back aboard for Steve Asmussen. He rode on Max Player and the Ali Sheba, but after riding basically a third of his winners the last 5 years, you know, those two with a well-documented split towards the end of last year. So we'll see how that storyline plays out. Bango, the horse that won this race last year, Seth, doesn't seem to be the same horse to me in his last few starts. But again, I wouldn't be surprised by anybody in this race.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're all on the outside looking in, but the whole Asmus and Santana thing over really the past 3 or 4 years, it's like, yeah, they're apart, they're together, they're apart, they're together. And it has been kind of interesting as a side story to watch. All right, and let's take a look finally at the Blame. A couple $100,000 up for grabs as they'll go 9 furlongs. And this race is clearly interesting because American Revolution is in, making the seasonal debut. We're going to take a look at the Cigar Mile from last year. Number three, American Revolution, will get it done. As a New York bred, they were trying to get into the commentator last week to start the season against New York breds in New York, but that race didn't fill. I'm guessing primarily because he was going to be in it. So American Revolution winds up in Kentucky in the blame. But you have Superstock in here, the Arkansas Derby winner from last year, and Title Ready going out for Dallas Stewart. It's a fun race. Scalding, who is on a real roll, winning the Ben Ali last time over at Keeneland for Shug. What do you think in the blame this afternoon?
Yeah, you're going to have a better line on American Revolution than I would. I know that four of his wins have come against New York breds, and the Grade One Cigar Mile was the other win, and that race really hasn't come back very strong. Following C, the horse he beat that day is more of a six furlong horse. Plainsman's more of a, you know, consistent Grade Three, Grade Two type. Olympiad was in that race, but that was before he was Olympiad.
Yeah.
He had a troubled fourth that day. We said how good he's been since that time. So I don't have a great read on American Revolution. You mentioned that he wanted to run against New York breds, and the commentator, they shipped him here to Churchill Downs instead. Doesn't have a great feel for me as the 8-5 favorite. I went to Dynamic One, actually. I went to Todd Pletcher's other horse, the horse that he's planned all along and running in this race, and in the Stephen Foster. Wasn't a huge fan of this horse as a three-year-old, but I thought his last couple of races were really good, particularly the Ben Ali. I know that he lost to Scalding that day, but he broke slowly. He was held up. He had to switch out while still in hand off heels, and he really rallied strongly. I think he would have gotten the Scalding with a better trip that day. He's going to need an honest pace to run at, obviously. I don't know if he's going to get it or not, but I like the way he's progressing for Todd Pletcher, and I'm going to give him a slight edge in another very, very contentious race.
Yeah, and a little bit later, there's also the Audubon, another stakes race on the card. Really a great stakes-laden card today. But before we let you go, did want to talk a little bit about Brilliant Racing, your horse racing partnership, because I know you had a nice win the other day, and I wanted to touch on that and just let you talk a little Brilliant in general. But first, let's talk about the win going back just a few days ago. May 30th, Churchill Downs, number five, Busy Echo, trained by Greg Foley, Tyler Gaffleone on board. Busy Echo is going to get it done by a neck at 8-1. And I saw you tweet it out, and I will tip my cap to you because I think these are pretty good numbers. You tweeted out that with that victory in 4 years of existence, Brilliant Racing is 17-101. That's pretty solid for a brand new partnership, relatively speaking. And so congratulations there, but talk about this win. We're watching them come down the stretch here.
Yeah, thanks, Evan. The numbers that we've had the last 2 years are even better than that. We got off to a little bit of a slow start with the partnership, but I would say since two Julys ago when Yes's Ginger came back off the layoff, you know, we've had a lot of success. We're very proud. We put a lot of hard work in. We do things the right way. Got a great group of owners. We've brought hundreds of new owners, you know, and real owners into the game. So we're extremely proud of that. You know, Greg Foley, Michelle Lovell, we've got Matt Shira working for us now. Really happy with the trainers that we use. And Busy Echo's win, she was 3-1 on the morning line, which I thought was way too low, but she was 8-1 when they left the starting gate, which I thought was way too high. But the great thing about that win is she sat off another horse. She took over. She showed a lot of heart, a lot of guts. Second career win, both for Tyler Gaffleone, both here at Churchill Downs, and kind of showing a new dimension. We've got a starter moving forward, maybe a first-level allowance at somewhere like Ellis or Indiana Grand, but super proud of the effort. We've got some two-year-olds on the backstretch. We got Yes's Ginger coming back, the defender title, hopefully, in the Chicken Fried Steaks at Lone Star. She's in foal currently, so we're looking forward to running her a couple times this summer. And should be an exciting rest of the 2022 year for us, at least we hope so.
Yeah, certainly. Again, congratulations on the success so far. The nice win the other day. I will tell people, I have it on my computer right here, brilliant horseracing.com, if you'd like more information. I know we have some local folks here that have been involved in the Brilliant Racing horses, so I always like to root for the connections, and particularly with local folks involved, and certainly looking forward to the two-year-olds this summer. What are your thoughts? Are you excited about the two-year-olds?
Oh, yeah. No, we've got a nice West Coast. It's probably going to be, you know, a little bit of a later type. We've got a Mastery that's going to be a little bit later coming in. And then we just bought a Creative Cause at the Timonium sale for $60,000. We think it was a safe play. We think he's going to be solid. A lot of those two-year-olds that wind up at the racetrack shortly thereafter, you know, need a little bit of time because their brains are fried from those sales. But this guy really seems to be smart, really seems to have a good attitude, seems to be really straightforward. So Michelle's got the Mastery and the Creative Cause, Michelle's level, and Greg Foley's got the West Coast. So, yeah, we're excited about all of our prospects. We've got Carmel Crush back in off an injury. We bought into him with 10 Strike Racing. Super excited about him, too. So we should have a lot of good action, like I said, this summer and into the fall. And, you know, you never know how it's going to go, Seth, but we put ourselves in position to succeed, and now we just got to hope for the best.
Yeah, nice. You got a little in with Marshall Graham. That's always interesting. So I wish you a lot of luck there. And, again, brilliant horseracing.com is the website to learn more if you're interested. And, Joe, we always appreciate the visit and the thoughts. Good luck to you and everybody this afternoon down at Churchill. And we'll probably check in, you know, once we get to Saratoga. We're not on the phone so much, although you said maybe you'll be there live, and we'd love to have you join us. But in the meantime, we'll probably catch up with you Stephen Foster weekend.
Yeah, that sounds good. And I really plan on coming to Saratoga this summer, having a cold beverage with you, hopefully at Druthers. And the People's Horse Racing fan, Brian Lucier, looking forward to hanging out with him and all my good friends in New York as well.
Very good. Like the shout out there. Joe, as I say, appreciate it. Good luck this afternoon. We'll talk again.
Okay, thanks. Good luck, guys.
Joe Krzyzewek, paddock commentator at Churchill Downs. And really, it's a really nice stakes day today down at Churchill. And we'll get into a lot of that in a couple hours when we launch OTB Live for Saturday afternoon. That's what's coming up next here on the network. As I said, well, that's what's coming up next as far as our programming. Coming up, though, in about 25 minutes or so, Epsom Derby. Keep that in mind. I mentioned earlier, favorite likely will be Desert Crown. But as I said, at 60-1 on the morning line, number 5, Grand Alliance, I thought was interesting, and number 10, Pizbadil, if I'm anywhere near pronouncing that correctly. But I thought those two were interesting, maybe at some prices. And as I say, it'll be about 25 minutes for that to come up. You can watch that right here on the network. Again, I'll be back in about an hour and a half or so, actually, for OTB Live for Saturday afternoon. I'm going to take a look at some Belmont, some Monmouth, and some of that nice Churchill action as well. Should be a lot of fun. I mentioned it earlier if you weren't tuned in earlier, but if you were watching the national weather this morning, you could see the big red blob going over Florida, and they had the tropical storm down there, which they were debating upgrading, but it seems like they have gotten a lot of weather down in the Gulfstream area, so they canceled for today. So if you're a Gulfstream fan, no Gulfstream this afternoon with the weather situation down there. But we'll have plenty of action here on the network and plenty of good, fun action, hopefully tossing out some good ideas. Don't forget, today here at the Clubhouse Racebook, the X-Acta board. It's a brand new promotion. I said it before, it's like one of the football grids. You pick a square, and so you have a couple of numbers, and if your X-Acta numbers hit during the afternoon, you get a voucher for some food at the restaurant, so you can come down and maybe grab some lunch here at the Clubhouse Racebook if you score in the X-Acta board contest. Even if you don't score in the X-Acta board contest, you can grab some lunch. So that's always recommended. If you come down, enjoy a little food, a little beverage, hang out with your friends, root along during the afternoon, the various races. The far side of the facility, we also have all the sports on the weekend on our other screen. So great place to come and watch the racing action. 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. Clubhouse Racebook. All right, I'm going to wrap it up. I am Seth Merrill. This has been Racing Across America for Saturday morning. Be back in tomorrow morning, as usual, on a Sunday morning, doing a little stakes recap and whatnot. So 10 a.m. tomorrow, back with Racing Across America. But as I stated before, we'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with the Saturday afternoon OTB Live. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.